And this is the Taylor Report. You can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. And later in the program, we're going to be talking with, I mentioned before, David Heap of CanadaBoatGaza.org. But we're really very fortunate. We're going to be going very shortly to speak to David Himbara himself, who has, as described, been through quite an ordeal. And I believe he's joined us now. Are you there, David Himbara?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Well, it's very nice to be talking to you. We were just speaking to John Hundrich of the Toronto Star. He's, of course, we're basing ourselves on the feature written about you, published in the Saturday Toronto Star, March 14. Just to, if we could review some of this, what was your job when you were in Rwanda? You're described often as in the office of the president. Could you tell us what you were doing, and then what caused you to leave your post?
Yes, actually, I worked in two positions. First, I was the principal private secretary to the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, from 2000 to 2002. And then I was head of strategy, development strategy, from 2006 to January 2010.
Mm-hmm.
The first time around, I found he was not really agreeable. He was not taking advice. So I said goodbye. Then he invited me for the second round from 2006. I was now in charge of developing economic strategies of where the country should go.
Mm-hmm.
Things went well for a few years. But around 2008 and 2009, during the global economic crisis, we developed some serious disagreements. Basically, he wanted to exaggerate how well the country was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would tell him that, look, in my capacity, and I was hard to tell him the truth. So we would argue about 11% growth.
Mm.
And in that year, I witnessed, then he became very aggressive. That's also the time the first time that I saw him beat people. So I started planning my...
That's a real shock, strategy. By the way, isn't it? I mean, of course, he's a controversial figure, quite well known around the world, but to find yourself actually becoming a witness, that must be put you in a difficult spot rather immediately.
Oh, it was a horrible, horrible sight. And of course, he would always dismiss me. You know, he had this issue with my Canadian education. So he would say, well, you know, the so-called PhD from Canada, you know. So what are you about? You know, when I objected to things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's when I started plotting my way out.
Mm-hmm.
And my family already stayed in South Africa. So when I went for holiday in January 2010, I decided not to go back. And it was perfect timing, because 2010 was horrible. It turned out to be the terrible, terrible year. The killings of opposition and all imprisonment, assassination of opponents outside Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
It all happened.
Mm-hmm.
in 2010 when Sankofa was outside. Yes.
Well, and we're speaking to David Himbara, former advisor to the president of Rwanda. It proved your status. You had, of course, studied in Canada, and you were Canadian. That proved to be almost a life-saving fact, didn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you bet. Things, well, you see, oh, you know, we take citizenships of countries, we belong to lightly.
Mm-hmm.
You realize later on how really it's life-saving indeed. At one time, I was traveling from Nairobi to South Africa, in Kenya, where I was doing some consulting. And for about 3 hours, I waited for the immigration people to return my passport so that I would continue on with my journey. Mm-hmm. And I was almost missing the flight. I was working with the Kenyan officials who had accompanied me to the airport. Mm-hmm. So I took my flight, but then on arrival, then they called me to tell me what had happened. There was this plan that I would just basically thrown on a Kigali-bound flight. Mm-hmm. But what then threw the whole plan, out was I had my Canadian passport. Mm-hmm. Had it been a Rwandan passport, I would have been a goner by now. Absolutely.
That was, of course, that was 2010.
I left Rwanda in 2010, but the incident in Kenya was 2 years later, was 2012.
In 2012, that you came that close.
Yes.
I'm very surprised, actually, at how this regime operates. The story written by Mr. Hondrich mentions that the language used toward you was that you were, if I can say, use the expression, they said the dog has to return.
Oh, yes. Look, things like that are really light compared to what happens to other people. Mm-hmm. People who die mysteriously. Mm-hmm. You see, one of the reason, by the way, that I came back to Canada, you see, I had left Canada way back in 1992 to the U.S. and then to South Africa, where I stayed, and then Rwanda. Mm-hmm. So because of this persisting harassment and intimidation, I decided to send my family back to Canada in 2012. Mm-hmm. Then I came to spend Christmas here in 2013. And just before, as I was planning to return to South Africa, my good friend, the former chief intelligence of Rwanda, mm-hmm. was strangled in a hotel in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Yes.
That's why I didn't go back. I said, no, I'm not going anywhere.
Wise decision.
Yes.
One of the most chilling moments. Could you talk about that a bit? I mean, they've characterized him in the most terrible kind of noxious language only days after a brutal killing. Various high-ranking members, the foreign minister, of top-ranking general, and the president himself, talked very closely to saying they had done it, and certainly that he deserved to die. How did you react to that? What do you make of that kind of conduct?
Well, first of all, even the same word "dog" was used. The one John mentioned, the same word "dog." This is what Patrick Carrigier was called. That if you live like a dog, you die like a dog. Mm-hmm. That was the Minister of Defense who used that language. Mm-hmm. But the President of Rwanda himself said that, hey, look, anyone who takes a stance against him and his regime will face serious consequences. Mm-hmm. And the President mocked the Rwandan officials who went out of their way to deny that they didn't kill Karegeya. No, him, he said, well, it's too bad that we didn't do it.
Yes.
But of course they did.
That is cynicism, and it's rather in neon light, I would say. We're speaking to David Himbara. By the way, I haven't. You have a PhD. It's an economics. What was your training?
I did political economy from Queen's University.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I finished my degree in 1990. I'm trying to make myself younger.
Who doesn't? Well, I just was wondering about this matter. I mean, for example, the this dismissive language towards you because you had the degree, etc. But I just is the problem with you, and from the point of view of the Kigali government, does it have as much to do with your ongoing commentary on the status of their economy? Because, you know, I noticed that their argumentation is, well, we might have done a few bad things, etc., but, you know, we're really progressing. But you tend to, you put a big question mark behind that, which is makes it very problematic for them.
Yeah. By the way, when I left initially, I didn't really, I wasn't vocal or anything. I just trying to reinvent myself after I left in 2012. Mm-hmm. But they pursued me, and then that's where then that's when I started to say, well, there is nothing to lose. I better speak out.
Mm-hmm.
That's when then I started writing, and of course I would point out that you know, the so-called Singapore of Africa is not real.
Yes, it's Singapore anything, or something.
Yes, it's more. Rather, it might be North Korea of Africa, but mm-hmm. definitely not.
Not Singapore.
Not Singapore. And yeah, so this upsets them. But also before I left, you see, my line was that look, development is not a joke. It's not like having nice sweeping the streets of Kigali.
Mm-hmm.
No, development really means wealth creation, economic reform that need to be based in laws and regulation. Mm-hmm. And the predictability of the environment. So I would say that if we don't do these things, then you can't develop.
Mm-hmm.
But they would want to show that they have already reached. But you don't reach just like that. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. this put me into conflict. But now then I'm out here. I'm really I'm free now to say, look, these are just pure lies. For example, when they say that unemployment in Rwanda is 3.4 and that the youth unemployment is 0.7, we could use those statistics in Canada right here, or in Norway for that matter. No one has such statistics, let alone a 10th world economy like Rwanda's.
Yes. My impression is that they expected you to falsify the numbers.
Oh, yeah. Basically, the president would come in and say, look, we need, 11%. and then I said, no, you can't have 11%. But then he does get his 11% because the regime goes along.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But this is Mr. David Himbara, and as if he was John Hundrich wrote a feature on Mr. Himbara. I recommend everyone get it. It's March 14 issue of Toronto Star. It's, of course, still available on the webinar. Ms. Himbara, I first was aware of you when I saw a report from Britain in the UK that it was British authorities who told you that your life was in danger.
Oh, The British the British told my colleagues, the British citizens,
mm-hmm.
that their lives were in danger. That actually, it was Scotland Yard,
mm-hmm.
That warned them. But not only that, Scotland Yard stopped some Rwandan kind of commandos that were coming to do harm in Britain. So they stopped them at the border crossing from France.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is now becoming a kind of worldwide problem.
Yes.
In Sweden had to expel a Rwandan diplomat for endangering lives of Rwandan diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
the South Africa probably has gone the farthest in this regard.
Well, of course, yes. They've had two, Mr. General Yamwasa and Patrick Eyregeya, both were attacked.
Yes, yeah, one died and one survived three times. But then after that, South Africa decided basically to expel four Rwandan diplomats. And of course, the case of the attempted assassination of General Kayumba Nyamwasa has now been through the court. And the judge who sent his would-be killers to prison made the comment that, in fact, he's sending the wrong people in jail. The right people are the ones in Kigali that are ordering this.
The judge said that?
Yeah, the judge said that, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I got to ask you about how this government sustains itself with internationally. The role of a gentleman, for example, is Mr. Blair. Do you have any... why does he continue, in your opinion, to help buttress this regime?
This is a very, very interesting question. So, first of all, you have the people like Tony Blair and Bill Clinton. These have foundations in Rwanda, and they work closely with the regime. But I think even the bigger question has to do with the British and American government themselves that continue. These two governments, I actually I have written a piece somewhere claiming that the two governments seem to have a kind of multiple personality disorder. because you see, on the one hand, the State Department and the Foreign Office in the UK, they issue these annual reports on the disastrous human rights abuses in Rwanda. These are the two governments actually detailing this. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, they actually are the lifeline of the regime. They pump money into the regime. So how do we explain this? Mm-hmm. I have looked at this question. It can't be that maybe they have economic interest, because the economy is so small and insignificant. Mm-hmm. But perhaps they see Rwanda as a kind of entry and exit point into the Congo, into DRC. Mm-hmm. Another explanation might be that there is a kind of military interest, because Rwanda has positioned itself as a leading African peacekeeping state.
Yes, it supplies soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it provides soldiers for South Sudan, Central Africa, even Haiti, out here in this background, in the hemisphere. Mm-hmm. So this might explain why, on the one hand, the two governments decry the violence, but on the other hand, keep pumping money in there.
There's a certain convenience in that friendship.
Yes, there is some element there that it baffles one's mind, really.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you point that out. We're speaking to David Himbara, and a former advisor to the president of Rwanda, now living in, we hope, safely in Canada. Now, you were at a meeting in Montreal where members of the Rwandan diaspora were crying out or raising the possibility that some of them could be in danger. What did you have to say to them, and if you would?
Yes, I basically, my line was that, reporters keep asking, where is evidence? Where is evidence? But sometimes there is no hard evidence. Mm-hmm. But from the experience of other countries, and then from what you hear from Rwandan, basically what happens everywhere, wherever there is a Rwandan diaspora, this is what tends to happen. the embassy, the Rwandan embassy, divides the community into two. They kind of work closely with those that agree with the regime, mm-hmm. and those that, of course, don't approve what they're doing, they label enemies, and then they start harassing them, and they start doing danger, some damage. I have to tell you that even the death of Karegeya, even that was the person who made that to happen, was a friend of his. So the embassy really, the embassies of Rwanda are
a friend of had been a friend of Karegeya's.
Yes. So here then, in a place like this, you have to you end up actually being you end up avoiding the Rwandan community, because that's one way of also avoiding the embassy here.
Mm-hmm.
So the message to the Canadian government really is that we can't take any of these things lightly, because we have seen them happen. Even in the U.S., even the U.S. people are warned. My friend Professor Susan Thompson, she's a Canadian teaching at Colgate University. She writes a lot mm-hmm. on Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
She has been warned by FBI to be careful.
Yeah.
So this we cannot take lightly in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And what is even more unnerving here is that the embassy itself is small and doesn't seem to be doing any work, for example, in promoting mm-hmm. The country. They seem to be just rumor and intimidation oriented. One of them, there are two people there. One of them had said goodbye and left Canada, but then he has returned,
mm-hmm.
Which then raises some antennas, you know.
Well, I would assume the community, of course, knows him, right? And probably have had their own encounters. I noticed that, what did you make of this? That one of these gentlemen who had lived here sent a tweet to John Hondrich, to the Toronto Star, and the tweet read, "Do something to show the difference with Geoffrey York." That would be a writer for the Globe and Mail who did a long piece about the death of Karegeya, a hater of Rwanda's progress. I mean, I was astonished that they would think that that was a smart thing to do.
That is precisely how that government works. The person who said that, John Rukumbura, used to be here, he lived in Canada for a long time, and then he goes back and then becomes instantly a member of parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen now to that member of parliament, mm-hmm. having the audacity to call a Canadian newspaper and trying to intimidate a newspaper like that.
It's monumentally presumptuous.
It's incredible.
One last thing, David Himbara. I've been following your articles. I hope everybody reads them. I find them at glpost.com and elsewhere. You're on Facebook, I believe. The message I see that you're projecting, most recent, you were in London, you're telling people, don't be afraid.
Yeah. You see, actually, you know what? Let me tell you a funny story. At one time, I always, whenever I feel afraid or anything, I go to the Toronto police.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, when I read that these commandos had arrived here and were in danger, I went to the Toronto police and I was describing the situation. So the policeman, the police officer asked me, says, "How many of you are out here in Canada from Rwanda?" So I estimated 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, "How many of these people that are harassing you in this embassy?" Then he said, and then I said, "Well, two."
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, "What's wrong with this picture?" He said. He said, "Look." He was not asking me to go and do anything against the law, but he said, "Look, you have to defend yourself.
Yes,
legally, you can't just keep running. Police can't protect each of 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a common voice and register your concerns to the government. The government will do something.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, that was an encouragement. I said, no, you know, we better stand up. So when I went to the UK, friends of mine and I, four of us, we marched to the embassy. One embassy.
Yeah.
Come out, let's discuss. Do you have anything to say? You know. So we must do the same thing here. So when I heard that my colleagues were giving a press conference here in Montreal, I jumped on the train. I had to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
No, we can't. No, we have to say no. Enough is enough.
Oh, I agree. And by the way, you know, fear is bad for the brain. I mean, you have to take a stand or not, and then you can think.
Absolutely.
Your articles have been brilliant, and we're really glad you're here, and we are glad that the community is standing up and with you. David Himbara, we're very appreciative. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. Finally, you had me on your show. Thank you
yes,
so much.
Yes, finally. Good.
Okay.
Talk to you again soon, we hope. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's David Himbara, former advisor, close advisor to the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, and have left that country and came under threat. His life was threatened. And, of course, his friend, as he identified him as such, Patrick Karegeya, a former head of intelligence of Rwanda, who had also left the country, was strangled to death on December the 31st, I believe. And it was New Year's Eve in South Africa.